secrets, throw 'em up. It's trade secrets, throw 'em up. It's trade secrets now. The dubious crew's got beats for you.
Boy. It's trade secrets.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Adam Curry in Palo Alto.
And Dave Weiner in Palo Alto.
Yeah.
Ain't that something, man?
Is this the first time, Dave, that we're doing this together?
Oh, yeah. It is the first time, man. It's like the zero time zone trade secrets.
Yowza. I'm trying to think. Should I look at you or should I?
Listen, I wouldn't blame
Clearly
you.
Clearly not.
I wouldn't blame you if you didn't. It's all right. I mean,
so let me just explain the setup here. We're in my my room at the Ricky Lee Jones Hyatt.
Hickey's Riot, actually.
Ricky's Riot. Ricky's Riot. Ricky's the Riot Hyatt. This is
Palo Alto, California.
Yeah, Sunday afternoon. It is November 7th, 2004. Let's see, time is, what are we at here? 4:30. And so we got two microphones, which is cool, because Dave is wearing my my love microphone, and I've got this new USB thing, which I'm still trying to figure out if I like it. it sounds okay, though. So how you feeling? After a blogger con.
I'm wearing the lav mic, so I wonder if that means I can speak Dutch and let the dog out.
Yeah, but only if you roll up my spliff as well.
Well, they don't let me do that. unfortunately, I can't join you in that. But
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm tired. It's been, you know, whatever. For everybody else, BloggerCon's a 1 day or a 2 day or a 3 day. In your case, I guess, what, 4 or 5 day thing?
Yeah, in total.
So for me,
it's a couple months.
It started in the summer, basically. Yeah. And it was after the Democratic convention.
That's when you got started.
And they
right?
saw me on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. They were talked about me on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and apparently
about you.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And apparently,
really,
right? And this was the deal, because like, going to Harvard didn't get Stanford interested.
Seeing you
being
on Jon Stewart.
Icon, and being a Silicon Valley icon for 20 years didn't get me an invite, but being on The Daily Show, or mentioned on The Daily Show, has been proven it's a real draw. What happened was they were covering the blogger, what they called Blogger Boulevard at the DNC.
Right. They were there as well, right? The Daily Show?
I actually didn't see
Samantha Bee, I think, was running around talking to people.
Sort of weird things. So they walked up to a blogger and they said, you know, what's the deal? Any real bloggers here? And whoever it was said, yeah, Dave Weiner from Scripting News is here.
Yeah.
And so then they saw that at Stanford. And apparently, this is like a big academic credential, getting mentioned on The Daily Show with...
it's an academic credential?
Apparently.
Apparently. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with all due respect, I mean, they were very nice. Stanford was very good, and the facilities were great.
Stanford, I thought, was awesome.
Really? Yeah, they don't really have campuses like that in the Netherlands, do they?
No. I mean, I don't think there's anything even... It is exactly... Well, Harvard was like that. Well, maybe a little bit different. I think Stanford is pretty much the picture-perfect image of a university campus.
It's pretty good.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people are doing interesting stuff. There was a dance marathon against AIDS yesterday, the day before, Friday.
Right, that's right, yeah.
Or they were soliciting people for it. I don't know. It's just, and you know, you see people walking around with disregard for traffic, because there is none.
Yeah.
But totally in this, like, elevated state of, I'm learning, I'm intelligent, I'm having a good time, I'm floating on air. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
No, that sounds really dreamy and ridiculous.
Maybe I need to roll up another one. Hold on.
I think you need to get your daughter. I think your secret success of your podcast is that you have your daughter around to keep your bullshit in.
That's right. Dad, shut the fuck up. Stop lying.
I guess I sort of have to play that role here. No, that's not what's going on. I mean, Stanford, first of all, we got very, very lucky on the weather.
Right on.
The weather doesn't have to be this nice.
Praise the gods.
And early, yeah. I mean, that's a thank God sort of thing. And Stanford is kind of in an idyllic location. I mean, it's from weather and landscape, and it's very beautiful.
It's
and I mean, and I thought, there's something incredible that happens. We play sort of a bit of roulette with how many people. We open the rolls up to, right, and we don't know what the no-show rate's going to be, who's going to be there, and whatnot. But somehow, it just ends up that the right number of people show up. And
it was consistent every single session.
Yeah, it was 90% full.
Because I was walking to you know, from room to room, and and at near the after lunch, I actually I don't think I could sit in any of the rooms.
Really,
I was like, you know, it was standing room only, but for like two people, so perfect. You know, it was, it's all right because I kept leaving anyway.
Yeah, I was so afraid that during the podcasting session that the other two sessions
wouldn't have any traffic.
Yeah, and it was really interesting. There was a woman from BBC who came and. And she came all the way from the UK, I thought, to be part of the podcasting discussion. Mm-hmm. And when I poked my head into the newbie session that Rebecca McKinnon was leading,
she was there.
She was there. So, you know, that
which was where she belonged, probably, if she wanted to learn.
You know, Rebecca, it was really funny because I talked with Rebecca as we were planning this, and she had been at BloggerCon 2, but not at BloggerCon 1. Mm-hmm. And she had done the international discussion at the first one, and she was a good choice for that because she spent so many years in China and Japan, and I think she was even in Korea for some time.
Really?
And that at, in the closing session at these BloggerCons, we always sort of ask, you know, what could we do better next time? What should we do, you know, differently and so forth? And one of the things that came up that I had forgotten... was that at the first BloggerCon, we had a whole track for newbies. And just, you know, the whole idea at that time was trying to sort of indoctrinate and evangelize the Harvard community on, mm-hmm. on weblogs. And
right.
then somehow we lost that in number two, and we didn't have anything for newbies. And so we brought it back, and it was wonderful to see this. And not only was it for blogging newbies, but it was also for BloggerCon newbies, for people who weren't familiar with the unconference format. And so, that, you know, there were 14 sessions, so it's, like, impossible to even, like, review them all. There was only two that I didn't actually participate in, mm-hmm. in some fashion. There was a quality... There were, you know, there was a variance in qualities. Sometimes, you know, people were up and, you know, there was... You know, really exciting discussions. I thought the podcasting session went beyond expectations. I
mean, and the only expectation we really had was, as long as we're all in the same room and meet each other, we already have... That was, you know, what we discussed, because you know, what do you want to get out of it? You know, it's so hard to do anything like that in an hour and 15 minutes.
Complicated ideas don't really come out in situations like this.
They do not.
You know, I mean, that's what you do, I guess, in your sort of solo podcasts and... you know, the writing that we do on the blogs and stuff like that. No, it was important, you know. First of all, what was really cool about this was that the podcasters were just, like, God, they were just such positive, smiling, happy people.
Yeah, weren't they, though?
Dave Slusher, I mean, you know, I had no idea what Dave Slusher looked like, right?
I didn't either. I'd never met him.
He's long hair. He's got long hair.
You know, I'd seen a picture, but you couldn't really see how long the hair was in the picture.
That wasn't my image of it at all.
Really?
No.
What did you think he would look like?
Gosh, I can't think of, you know, I don't want to, like, I want to give you a name of an actor
or
something.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah, and actors are always good.
Right, but but it's like, I'm not thinking.
No, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I thought... straighter and not smiling so much, you know what I mean? And
the thing about Dave Slusher
is the guy's smiling all the time. Same thing with Dawn and Drew. They have this, you know, sort of twinkle in their eye. She's a lot cuter than I thought she'd be, let me tell you that, you know?
So I hung out with him last night.
Yeah, I know. Yep. Hey, oh, you went to the movies.
Yeah,
with
well before I get to that part before I get to that part, we came up with one thing about that was needed at BloggerCon.
What's that?
And this is, you know, this is totally a Dawn and Drew and an Adam discussion. Let me just make sure we're still recording. Yeah, we're doing good. So at the end, someone suggested, in a rather brutal way, but you know, it's like, well, instead of just drinks that rot our teeth out, can we have some water?
Yeah, no kidding.
Totally. And Don and Drew and I said, you know, and we also think a bowl of Tic Tacs.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because you know,
well,
you're
know
sitting there all day
is,
and you don't eat and you're drinking
and you
coffee.
Get the shitty breath after it's all over.
That's what the Tic Tacs are for.
Yeah, I mean, believe me, I was walking around the same place you were. Yeah, that place kind of had a little thing going.
We got kind of stanky.
Well, you know, the water, we ordered water.
You ordered it, just didn't show up.
Oh man, I don't know. Well, you don't see me all that often, but like
I like water too.
Always with
water.
A bottle of water, you know.
Sure.
And so I said we need to have. That was the first thing I said. We got to have bottled water during the breaks. But I don't know.
What happened? Yeah, well. If that's all that went wrong.
Right, man, that's what I'm going to say. Yeah. I was just basically thanking the good Lord and Murphy and whoever else that, you know,
Allah.
I mean, the other thing is, and this is always a problem, is that the air conditioning never supports the number of bodies we put in the room.
That didn't bother me. I had no problem with the air. No,
it
I'm
got
usually
a little
so
stuffy. It got a little stuffy there, you know.
At the, near the end of the pod, but I was also just, you know.
Yeah. You were the one that was
adrenaline
heating the room
was flowing.
Up, basically. Yeah,
yeah, adrenaline was flowing, and I was getting warm, so I totally felt that at a certain point, but it was not bad at all. It was, and I just wanted to say that the what'd you call them? Your monitors, is that what you call them?
Yeah, we call them monitors.
Yeah, monitors. Yeah. They were, I mean, you couldn't tire them out.
No, they were great.
Jerry Springer would give his left nut to have these people holding the mic in his audience. Or Oprah or whoever. And they're really good. And Mike, the AV, Mike was his name,
yeah,
right? The AV guy.
Really like Mike,
He was like a gargoyle. He had this pack, and he had all this stuff on him, and he had all kinds of bags and everything, which he didn't have to open because everything worked.
Yeah.
He could split the screens, the audio was there, wireless mics always crap out once in a while, but you know, it's whatever, and it just worked. It was it was high quality shit, I thought.
Well, it wasn't just him. There was also John Harrison, who does the AV.
John Harrison,
Stanford. He wasn't there, but all the setup stuff, and that's his system basically.
It was cool,
you know, and it's a good school. I mean, they basically have great facilities, and that worked. The major problem was actually the registration system and badges.
That was pretty funny because I wasn't registered.
Right.
My friend Ron was registered as number 8.
Yeah.
Because I'd registered him. And he became me. He stole my identity.
Yeah, well, you're lucky we let you in, you know. It's
like, well, they weren't going to let me in. I'm really sorry.
Well, they were told not to
Jennifer,
let
was
in.
That who was the...
Yeah.
Jennifer said.
Jennifer happens to be the executive director of their Internet and Society Center. So
okay. Well,
she's kind of like, you know, she's like the boss's boss of everybody, except for Larry. Wasn't Larry's boss.
Yeah, she recognized that I should probably get a badge.
Yeah. But we basically had a policy that, you know, we were going to basically try to have a streamline for the people that, you know, we knew that there were people who would show that hadn't registered. In fact, they had emailed me to that.
There must have been. How many do you think crashed just last minute? Probably 20?
Maybe? Who cares? I don't
know. It doesn't
really
matter.
I'm
just interested as a percentage.
It's really, really impossible to say. I mean, that's the funny thing. You would think that we would have a way of knowing even... I don't even know how many people were there, Adam. I mean, you know, I mean, because there were lots of no-shows and there were lots of people who weren't registered that ended up coming... I mean, we're going to estimate that because basically I'm going to go by 90%. Basically say 90% of our capacity was full at all times. And not that you really sort of get any, you know, data from that for the next time. Because, you know, every time we do it, the show's bigger, you know. And so by extrapolation, one would think that, you know, the
next... That was a good point that someone brought up. You know, what do we do next year?
Well...
Shea Stadium?
No. No, and I think the format is kind of already getting a little old, actually.
A little tired.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's like almost like an engineering thing. I kind of want to figure out if there isn't a way to
turbocharge it,
or, well, you know, because exactly. I mean, I did in a couple of sessions that I was in. I tried Core Values of the Web that Mary Hotter was leading.
Yeah, I saw some of
that. I thought, had gotten, and I want to be clear, this was just my opinion because there were other people that felt it was going really good. I walked into it and I thought, well, it's bogged down here. It's not getting anywhere. And so I said, why don't we just put the mics down for a while and, like, just shout out what we want to say. Let's be less formal. They didn't want to do it. So,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, well, I respect it. Sure. It was funny. Stacey Kramer, she was there from...
She's in the hotel, yeah. She
PaidContent.org, right? She also had written...
She's an Online Journalism Review?
She has written for Online Journalism Review and for Wired. She writes for Wired News and stuff, too. And she was funny, you know, when I suggested, she turned around and she says, "We can't do that, Dave!"
And don't hold the mic!
and it was like... And then she caught herself and she says, you know, this is how I fight. That's just how I feel. It was like, I said, cool.
Well, all right.
And later on, she came. She said, you know, God, I hope I didn't hurt your feelings. And And I said, no. I mean, real emotion is good.
It's good. That's what we
want. Well, I said, all we caught you doing, Stacey, was being human. Which is really, in a way, is sort of like, if we get people to behave human in these conferences, we win, you know? Because so much of it is, you know, conference going is like, you know, here's my space and my play and my strategy. And,
I love play. Yeah.
And my
you know what play is in Dutch?
No.
Toilet.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
So you say in the podcast. I'm doing a podcast play.
Yeah. It's what you leave behind before you flush.
Before we send our packets.
It's my little packet switch network there, down there, wherever that may be.
It's right. True, though.
So, I mean, I would think that, you know, where this is all sort of, this all leads to, you know, the extreme example of this is, I don't know how people are going to take this, but it's like massage class. You know, I used to go to these 11-day massage class intensives, you know, and I like to say, it doesn't matter what you talk about. Basically, we all talk about the same thing. Always, under all circumstances. Whenever you have a discussion, you're talking about, this is, basically you're saying, I exist, this is what I see,
listen to me, hear my opinion.
Right. I want your approval, and I'm willing to give some approval, but mostly I want your approval, I'm here.
What I'm saying. Yeah.
Right.
That's
and
human nature, though.
It's what we do. That's 99% of communication is basically the, you know, and so the purest form of communication is touch, you know. I mean, if you want to establish that you're here, or make contact with someone else, the quickest way to do it is to touch, and that reaches in at a very, very deep level, and it's scary, and you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But we can't do that in this context. This isn't what blogging is about. It isn't what you have to sort of like choose how far down that spectrum you want to go.
Right.
The more real human emotion and trust. You see, we talked about this at breakfast, right?
Yeah.
The more you get to the point where, you know, you meet a guy like Dave Slusher and you find out, man, he's friendly. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean he's a good person? You can't really tell.
You don't really know yet.
What it means is that you're experiencing some of his humanity and you're building a little bit of trust, you know, which is good and it's rare. Most conferences don't even have that much of that going on. So, so how can you get people to exchange more and, you know, build those kind of relationships in a more direct way and at the same time accommodate more people?
And also
more people who haven't been through 1, 2, and 3.
And some newbies. Right?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
the ones that sort of come in with their, you know,
preconceived notions
of how this is going to work, right?
Yeah.
And we saw them try to impose some of the new people try to impose their expectations on the structure of the conference. And, maybe at some point we won't be able to, maybe it won't work anymore. Maybe BloggerCon will just become like, you know, Macworld Expo or Convex, but it will at least be large at that point. Yeah.
Isn't everything that grows big eventually destined to suck?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, you think maybe...
Well, what name something that became big, and that doesn't necessarily mean... Well, maybe it is only when there's a lot of people. Maybe that's when it just becomes unmanageable.
Well, I've never really been all the way with something that got big.
No, but just like, yeah, well...
I tend to be there at the beginning. And when I'm lucky, I'm lucky when I get there at the beginning and the thing has legs and all the people that are there are really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I've been there, that was personal software, that was Wired, that was the web. I was really lucky. I think we're there again now, you know, it's like...
I agree.
We were there at the blogging world, we're there again at the podcasting thing, you know.
Yeah.
5 years from now, we're going to look back and you're going to look at the people that were at this conference and each one of them is going to have gone on to do something that you're going to say, isn't it amazing that all those people were in the room at the same time?
At the same time, right?
And it just has that feel. I've seen it enough now. You know, I don't tend to be around, like, when it becomes something big. I generally have moved on to the next thing at that point.
Right, right.
You know,
so. No, but I saw it with Think New Ideas, and we started as on-ramp with, you know, like, 12 guys and girls with pizza boxes on the servers, which, of course, is always the romance of it.
Yeah.
And then we grew really quickly, and we wound up at, like, 400 or 500 people across 7 states. And even though it was... What saved us, of course, was we were divided... You know, in chunks of 80 to 100 people in offices, so it didn't sucked tremendously. But as a whole, yeah, I think it did. And I've and MTV sucks, and you know all this stuff that anything yeah. that's cool and small. Once you get more and more and more people, you know what you forget? You forget a lot of the newbie stuff along the way, and yeah. then people who jump on, jump in with, as you say, with their thoughts of what it is and what it ought to be, and you change and morph and.
Yeah, and I think that I agree totally, and it I think there's a way to put it, is that it will get taken away from you. Right? In other words, you create yeah. it, and you know the first couple of times you do it, you sort of think, well, what I want to do, well, the first time I did it, I didn't want to hold on to it. That was Living Video Text. After a certain point in time, it became really clear to me that in order to get the reward, I was going to have to give it up. I was going to have to let
right.
it go, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Second time, Userland, I was insisting that I didn't want to give it up, and it didn't ever, it never grew up. It sort of was sort
What does that tell you?
Well, it tells you that entrepreneurs' second efforts generally don't work, okay? And there's right. a good reason for it, because...
Mine didn't.
Right. You know, right, that's right. Yeah. That's when we started hanging out. Yeah. We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
And my theory on that is that it's at that moment that you try to negotiate with the world. What you want is you want to have your cake and eat it too. You want to have the success that you had in the first one, but you don't want to work your ass off. You want to do it in a rational way that only you know you can only do if you have money and you have experience.
Well,
and
here's the problem: is you do. I disagree. You worked your ass off for Userland, but there's a hunger factor that you can't determine.
Yeah, I wrote about this today on Scripting News. In other words, when I've noticed this. Palfrey helped me see this. John Palfrey at Harvard, who I worked for, helped me see this, that basically he said, well, Dave, isn't everything you do a success? And I said, no, it's not. But when I want, when I will it to work, when I want it to work, it will. Because I'm that kind of person. I'm
yeah.
stubborn. I can't.
You don't say.
I am stubborn. And I can't. Yes, I am, as a matter of fact. And the key thing is that I can't conceive, when I'm going to succeed, I can't conceive of failure. On the other hand, with Userland, I could totally conceive of it, and I accepted it.
Yeah.
I didn't,
yeah.
like you said, I didn't have the... it was negotiable.
Right? Yeah, right. It wasn't work or death or starvation.
Right. And the first time, it was totally non-negotiable. I mean, basically, I got to a place where if I didn't, it was came really close to tubing and several times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So on this one, and I think, okay, so the lesson is let it be taken away from you. Know that it's going to be taken away from you one way or another, and find a way to enjoy the success even if it does. You know,
yeah. Well,
so,
of course, yeah.
So, like for example, in the case of Userland, you know, it would be unfair to say that it got taken away from me, but it's also true that I'm not involved with it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the satisfaction is that there's Blogger and there's Movable Type and there's WordPress and
this is a fucking
and
industry.
There's NewsGator and Blog Lines and Feed Demon and Feedster,
NetNewsWire,
right? All these things came along to sort of fill the gap that was created by these products.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that says basically you can go ahead. We could have even sold out Userland if I wanted to, if the opportunity presented itself to make millions of dollars selling it out.
Right.
Once there was a standard format and protocol and it was could be replaced, then there was absolutely nothing ethically wrong with, the whole thing would have an independent existence. The problem with Moore and Living Video Text was that wasn't true. And the category dried up and died as after we sold that out. So
right.
That was my negotiation on Userland. I didn't want that to happen. I didn't want to get to a place where the thing succeeded to a certain point and then it came time to sell it out and mm-hmm. then as a result there would be nothing left in the scripting industry.
Well, I'd be curious to see if based upon, I showed the outliner at the podcaster mm-hmm. session, if people downloaded Radio Userland.
I don't think so.
No.
No. We're gonna need to do. I don't know what it's gonna take, but first of all, I don't think it's Radio Userland. I think that we need to do a package based on the open source base.
Oh, Frontier.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
And it needs.
Well, to me, that's the same.
Right. Well, yeah. But and it needs to
same
boot
true.
Up in exactly the mode you want.
Right.
To boot
not
up.
In the weblog creation mode, but in
more
the
even more
podcast,
directed. I want a window
console.
Opening up with an outline.
Yep.
And then an instruction window somewhere immediately next to
right.
it.
Nice.
And then when you save, it goes right up to the server you want it to be on, and it's linked in and,
yep.
and content managed.
Yep.
That they get that sort of instant result, and they can immediately see what's going on there. That's when you're going to start getting not any kind of an avalanche or wave of it, but you'll start getting a trickle of adoption when you do that, because
right.
the people that get interested in it will have an immediate good sort of experience. Right?
And yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and I think it's a great use of.
Yeah, we'll get there. I mean,
I just have to comment on this microphone for a second.
Oh, okay.
So this is a USB microphone.
Yeah, it's kind of cool looking, isn't
well,
it?
Well, yeah, but hold on. There's a problem. It's made by Mac Mice. It was given to me for free. But USB audio interface has a delay. So you're direct on the line in with the lav mic.
Uh-huh.
So I'm hearing you. This is like the GSM delay. So when I'm talking, there's a half-second delay because the USB can't process the signal fast enough.
Hmm.
So that's why you can see me sticking the thing in my ear every other
why
5 minutes.
Why are you sticking the thing in your ear?
So that I can monitor and make sure that it's working. You know, it would be sad if it won't. You know, just flip the transmitter around so I can see the lights. Thank you. Do you have any lights?
I have a red light and a green light. The green light's flashing.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Once the red light starts to flash, then you're low on battery.
Oh, it's not flashing.
Okay, then you're good.
It's solid. Oh, okay. Yeah,
you
remember.
Understand what I'm saying? I mean, that would really suck.
Yeah, you're talking and I'm not.
Yeah, that would blow.
Because I'm talking a lot, right?
Yeah. As long as I don't have to listen
to
it, though, it's great.
You want me to watch the light and make sure that when the red light, if
the red light starts to flash, then we have an hour left, so we're good. You don't even have to look at it.
Well, then we don't have a problem because...
We don't have an hour in us.
Well,
another hour.
How big is your dick? I don't know. I mean,
well, Steve Gilmore's dropping by here. He's got a big swinger.
He had the length of our. It's additive, right? So, like, it's length of your dick and length of mine.
That's right. Yeah. John Holmes, step back.
Yeah, except old Steve is an hour and a half late.
He called me. Well, you were out getting drinks.
He did.
Yeah, he said, "Hey." I said, "Hey, I'm waiting for the apology." You know,
it ain't coming.
Yeah, it did. It came. I was in a coma.
Yeah,
and I said, you know what? I said I was waiting for the apology, and I'll accept. It's accepted, you know. So he was gonna. He'd probably be here any minute.
Hey, so I got a new cell phone today.
Yeah,
I did. And the old one, it was really funny. I was talking with my mom. I called her first because I knew she was worrying. You know, she sent me an email.
She wanted to know how it went.
Well, no, not just that. It's like my old cell phone died like 3 days ago.
Oh, she couldn't get a hold of you for a couple
of
days.
I was totally incognito. I wasn't updating my blog. My server had gone down, as you know.
Dude, I was even worried, motherfucker.
Right, exactly.
You know I was
so
worried.
So it turns out that she... This is so cute. She left voicemail, which I will never hear because the phone is completely kaput, saying basically she thought I had either died or was in a hospital or something.
I just wanted the server updated. I give a shit about all that.
So she left a message. She says, "If you're hearing this, I'm his mother. Call me."
Really?
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Well, you know, at this late stage in life, basically, it's you know, that used to really bother me, being mothered that way when I was a kid.
No, but that's important stuff.
Yeah, man. It's cool. It's cool that she worries. It's like... And
we still have moms, dude. You know,
yeah,
that's really cool.
Well, I have both. I have both a mother and a father.
Me too.
Yeah,
that's gonna be.
Oh, you think that's Steve? Yeah.
Hello. Where is here?
Yep, that's Steve.
Walk all the way to the back. We're doing trade secrets.
Yeah. No, okay. Steve doesn't want to be a podcaster, does he?
So it's basically straight back, and it's 2351. Right on.
So this is like in New York on WORAM when I was growing up, they had a radio show that basically it was live,
mm-hmm.
and it was in this couple's living room in Manhattan
cool.
on Park Avenue. They were like a
rich couple, right? Right, right, right.
And all these people would just drop by their house. And they would sit around and talk
with
them.
We need to find a rich friend and we can do a show.
In New York, in Park Avenue. Well, we're doing it today. I mean, we've got the chair for Steve. And of course, you know, he's like a guest. He's like, you know, it's like the Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction and Green Acres and the...
what was the pink submarine?
Pink submarine. Well, these were all TV
all
shows.
The shows. Yeah,
right.
Those,
I don't like Pink Summer, but they were all, they all knew each other. And occasionally Gomer Pyle
and
would show up
in,
on
yeah.
Petticoat Junction. Yeah.
That's just like podcasting.
It is. Yeah.
I'm with
well,
Don
it is.
Drew
that's right.
And,
well, yeah, when is Don and Drew coming over? Well, you still haven't told us about the movie, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So last night, after Jing Jing.
How was Jing Jing, by the way? Did you like it?
It was great. And actually, because when I came in, I was late. And because partly because I was stuck in this elevator, and partly because I didn't have a ride, but I knew it wouldn't be a problem. I knew if I just went to the front of the hotel, there would be someone from BloggerCon going my way, and there were five people, so it worked out.
Yep.
That's, you know, that's BloggerCon to the max.
Totally.
Right? You know that's going to work.
You get a ride. That's the least
that's, of it. Yeah, that's the easiest.
Maybe you get more, but
so I was hoping I'd get laid, and instead of
you didn't get laid. You
no,
could have gotten laid.
No, yeah, I could have, I guess.
I don't think there's any question about that.
Well, you got to, the people I got to hold a sign up, so I know that they're signaling me.
Well, we should have had a session that said, who wants to have sex with Adam,
yeah.
Right?
It's sex for fun.
Nobody would have been at any of the
empty
other
session.
No, it wouldn't. No, Adam, I don't think so.
Hi, nice to have you guys here today.
Yeah, it's interesting.
No. So, so when I came in, you know, it was like there was really one table was all filled up, and I could, and it was like the cool table.
Yeah.
You, know, it
you
was,
mean like the one I was at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And you know, and it was Don and Drew and you,
right.
And the other table was behind that, and there were
all the rest of the people. Basically.
Well, that's what was my initial feeling. I'll be honest. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, all the rest of the people, but it was great, you know, and it filled up pretty quickly, and you know, we did an introduction round and talked, and actually. There were incredibly amazing people at
cool.
my table.
Who were they?
Including, well, the, oh, I forgot her, I'm spacing out, the girl from Audible.
Oh, right, yeah.
And some Apple engineers. You know, it was funny because like, you know, I'm an
Apple
system engineers.
People
system,
like, work at Apple?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a system engineer. For, I'm
do
a system engineer.
By any
Apple.
Chance, work on iPods?
No,
oh.
No. And, you know, hi, I'm Adam Curry. I've spent tens and thousands of dollars on your product.
Do they bring you any free products?
No. No.
Well, how tacky is that?
Well, but, you know, I don't think these guys are in the free product division, you know. That's our
there
friend
used to
Sam
be a
Levin.
Time when Apple, like, they would...
they would give stuff away. They gave me a Mac,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, they would just show up and yeah. they would loan you the
Daniel
hardware.
Daniel Paul.
No, Mike Boyce was my guy.
Okay,
yeah.
my name was Daniel.
And Guy Kawasaki.
My bitch was the
Guy
Daniel
Kawasaki.
Paul.
Yeah,
yeah. I never even met him.
Basically,
I mean.
They would just show up at your place with yeah. loaner hardware, and you'd sign a little piece of paper saying mm-hmm. that someday you might think about giving it back.
I did
and
have to do that, actually.
Never, and they
I did
never
have
come
to,
back.
Eventually, the program ended.
Yeah.
Eventually.
And they asked for it back?
Yeah.
And you gave it to them?
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Well, but
Adam, Adam, time out. You're not
yeah,
supposed
fucked
to do
that,
that.
Didn't I?
Well, you're fucking it up for everybody else.
I mean, yeah, I said, fuck you, Apple!
Jeez Louise.
So anyway, let me get back to Don and Drew.
You've got
to
be kidding. You gave it back.
I'm an honest guy. Oh, I signed a piece
God.
Of paper.
God, all right.
So, hold on, let me just make sure I'm not exploding here. Yeah, good.
Any minute, Steve Gilmore is walking in that door.
So I hope I get to the Don and Drew story before that.
Okay.
And so it's, you know, like, what are we going to do after dinner? And you were going to go home. I guess they'd already asked you.
I did. Oh, and, they asked me. I'm
yeah.
too bashful.
And right across the street was a midnight showing of Lollipop Girls in 3D.
Cool.
And it's a porn movie. And I'm like, you know, the opportunity to... That's kind of like when Patricia said, you know, if I didn't have sex with David Bowie, my sister would never let me live it down. I figured the podcast community would never let me live it down if I didn't go to this movie with Don and Drew.
So that's why you went?
Well, I wanted
it
to go,
fear
too.
Fear of being put
no.
down by the podcast community?
No, I love porn.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And,
so they had to twist your arm, basically.
Yeah, really. So they're two friends who were really, really fun people.
Yeah, they were all pierced in sort of the same way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah the, it's made you, my daughter
really
would be so proud of my new friends.
Really?
Yeah, she's totally into piercing.
How does
yeah.
she know about them being pierced?
She saw the Don Drew website.
Oh, and their pictures are up there.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But you know, when I you know, talk because the friend had like the big African earlobe pierced with
oh,
a huge bullet hole, like a shotgun hole.
Wow.
Yeah, that's trippy. You just want to like stick your finger in there. You know,
that was the woman or the man?
The guy. Yeah.
The guy. Okay.
And he was part of the Human Genome Project.
Wow.
The sequencing of the
so
genome.
I guess he must be smart. Then, huh?
I asked him that. He said, yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Like, it's smart.
Like, nothing like a straight yeah. answer, right?
So we came back to the Riot Hyatt first to get prepared for the show.
The what?
The Riot Hyatt here, Ricky's Hyatt. you know, to get prepared. And Dave Slusher showed up because he was in the hotel. Actually, on iTunes, they use Rendezvous, and I was looking at his playlist on iTunes and playing his music for the past 2 days. You know, a couple people showed up. Yeah, he's gone now. He had to leave early this morning. That's why he didn't go with us to the movie. So we go to the movies. We go back. And you're in the, and it's a like an old movie house with my screen at home. You know, the flat screens that I have a investment in the company that makes these flat screens. It was my screen at home was almost the size of this screen. I mean, so it was not big.
It was the Aquarius Theater, right?
I think it's on
Emerson Street. In case you want to go there,
right
Emerson
across from Jing Jing.
Correct.
And hey,
Steve
man,
Steve Gilmore,
everybody.
Hey,
and he's on his iPod and he's listening to the Daily Source Code. Bring a chair.
How are we gonna get a microphone on it?
Well, I'm gonna do like a monitor thing.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Great.
Hey, I see you have a map. Did you enjoy it? Oh, you'll get a chance to like stroke me about 18,000 times now. Boing.
That was the real one.
That was the real one. The rest of it's the fake ones.
Hollywood. Come on over, Steve. A little closer.
There you go. I'm on a wireless mic, Steve.
Yeah.
How's that?
You don't even have to close mic.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, I just caught up to you. I'm listening to you and Doug Kay.
Oh, the interview?
Yeah.
Dave hated that.
I hated it? What?
You told me that.
What?
The interview with Doug Kay, did we?
I didn't hate it.
You said you hated the way I sounded.
Oh, I didn't hate the way you sounded.
Then why did you use the hate word?
I didn't say I hated it, did I? I did.
I wouldn't repeat that. Not a big deal.
Well, guys, I'll see you.
Yeah.
You said you hated the way I sounded, not what I said. Well, I sounded. You said you didn't sound like you had the same energy as the traits. They did source code.
Well, that's true. I didn't think. I mean, but well,
you
told
the story a number of times. I think
it sounded like you were. Well, look, I don't want to. You know, I mean, the first it was.
It's hard.
I mean,
Steve, see what you did?
No, the problem. All right, let me just try it. Yes. I mean, first of all, it was a long time ago, and so the feeling is gone, right?
Okay.
And basically, I wanted to. I didn't hate it because it made me want to do the interview with Doug so that I could give him the other side of the story and why what you're doing is so important. Okay. And from without
well, this is all the stuff I haven't heard yet. So
you haven't heard it yet.
I just heard the first half where you know it's MTV to MTV.
Right, right.
You know, all of that.
Uh-huh.
I tried to get him to tell me this last night, and he was like, you know,
what story?
Belligerent about this, you know, that I had to go listen to this tape. So I just did.
Right.
You wanted to know the MTV story or something else?
I was right at the point where you know. Okay, so then you went into said you know.
Yeah, at a certain point, Don and Drew invited me to go to the 3D.
Oh yeah, how was it?
He's telling the story about it. Why don't you let's let him finish the story? So how was it?
What's the name of the theater again?
The Aquarius Theater.
The Aquarius.
It's on Emerson Street in Palo Alto.
So we're saying that the lights are kind of half dim, and it's full. I mean, it's all kinds of couples of people, and it's a total Rocky Horror Picture Show vibe. Like, this would be interesting. This guy gets up, he looks like a Unix system engineer. I hate to say that, but you know what I mean? He just looks like he compiles Red Hat kernel for breakfast.
Cool.
And he stands up and he's like, "Hi, everybody, you know, we're sorry that we're a little late, but I had a scheduling conflict." Okay. And then he goes to this porn trivia. You know, how long was John Holmes a dick?
And how like, how long?
I'm like, whoa, these people know they're porn.
How long was it?
11?
Yeah, 12 and a half.
Yeah.
And there was some other questions like, who portrayed John Holmes in Boogie Nights? Marky Mark.
Oh, okay.
Mark Wahlberg.
Okay.
Stuff like that. And then you proceed to pass out these mints. For free, little tins of mints. I left it in the theater. He said, "We're giving these away for free because they suck. You can't get them open. That's why we're giving them away." And literally, the lights go down. You hear people going,
sound effects
like that. Like
yeah.
That.
Yeah. All right, I'll do the ping.
Thousands of mints. And so then you get like a Tom and Jerry thing, and you have your glasses. Here's my glasses. So you get a Tom and Jerry cartoon, and then it starts, and it was. The movie was intended to make fun of the 3D effects. So every opportunity, people like stick the head out, and, you know, the leg is coming in, and the arms are going like that, and they're pouring water into the camera. So, and it was total cheesy. And Don was right. At a certain point, we should have had a squirt gun. You know, just to kind of squirt the audience, because there was definitely a money shot. It was just so fucking weird. Like, oh, God. And you can see all the actors trying to, like, shoot the audience, and they'd be like, ah, oh, who's disappointing? You
know, oh, now I'm getting it. I'm
getting
it now.
There's a chick on a trampoline, and Don, and it's quiet, and Don goes, that's my mom! It was a fucking trip, man. It was great.
Oh, God. That's like having a soundtrack. I wanted Doug Cade to, like, walk behind me everywhere I went and, like, be my soundtrack, like, announcing everything that I was doing, sort of narrating my existence. Now I just realized Dawn would be even better for that, you know? She could be explaining what everything, you know, what's going on around and who's, what kind of underwear they're wearing and, you know, what they're thinking and whatever else there's going on in there. It was something else sitting across from Don and Drew at dinner last night. They were really nice people.
So, what are they like?
They're very nice.
Sweet. I told them Ole and Lena jokes. You know, because they're from, you know Ole and Lena jokes?
From Scripting News.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're from Wisconsin, and they'd never heard of Ole and Lena jokes. So they were all new for them. And, you know, that was nice. Their friends who were from Minnesota, they knew about it. Minnesota. They knew all about Ole and Lena jokes, so it was nice. And I don't know, it was all about vibe, I think. It was just all about, like, you know, hey, how you doing? It's nice to see you. Mimicking each other's accents, singing each other's songs, you know.
So is Drew the Sonny or, you know, the Ike Turner of the
Don't
ask, no. Well, he's, don't underestimate. She's the flamboyant one for sure.
Yeah, but he knows exactly how to push the button.
He's the straight man for sure. Yeah.
But we were in line waiting for
George Burns.
Yes, it's George and Gracie is more like it. Yeah,
we're waiting in line and
we're waiting Garth.
Don and Drew show. They're just the way. That's the way they talk. It is exactly the way. There's nothing.
Right. They didn't learn a new way of communicating. No, they've seen it like they.
No, they just learned to turn on the microphone.
And. She really liked the whole user thing, too. She was telling me about that. They had known nothing about the software industry, so none of the sort of... And that was the thing I kept hearing from people. What's that?
None of the... I say you think.
I think, yeah, I think. Right. The funny thing was I heard that from a lot of people was that they didn't understand what the whole shtick was. And I really appreciated what you said there, that, you know, there's a whole history of this, and it goes back a long, long ways. And, you know, bringing BloggerCon to Silicon Valley... I mean, it was inevitable that we would go through.
Well, you waited a long time to do this.
Well, long enough, yeah. Yeah, I guess three, no, this is the third BloggerCon, right? Mm-hmm. What else was a long time?
I just, you know, I think it was, you were taking it slowly because you were concerned about, you know, the impact of the kinds of things that actually went. You know, there was a little flare.
Oh, we never would have gotten the thing off the ground if the first one had been in Silicon Valley. Right, it wouldn't have launched at all. I mean, nobody, you know, you needed to have first, we needed to get the sort of format down, you know, this idea that users, we saw it. The users didn't, some of the users didn't even want to be independent. They wanted the vendors to tell them what to do. You know, or how, you know.
Yes, you know, people like to be, you know, they sort of split between being wanting to be free and wanting to be controlled because it feels safer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think eventually they can have what they want if they want to be controlled, or maybe not controlled isn't the right word, but we still have a ways to go before. I mean, if this is going to be a commercial market where people sell products and you know, users get what they want, we can't like have like a trade show, a floor show, or. You know, because, you know, what's going to happen? Then the vendors are going to want to put people on panels and, you know, whatever.
You know,
the whole usual thing.
As I said, you know, in my comments, I've been involved in a bunch of these kinds of shows in the past. And, you know, there are good reasons to do those kinds of shows. The only thing that really kind of turned the corner for me is that there are about 30 of them a year,
yeah.
As you said.
Yeah.
And, you know, what can't we just have one that doesn't do it that way?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, the answer is yes. I mean, 90% of the people in the room either didn't understand what the big thing was, or
or felt that, you know, they were being heard for the first time, and that felt good. You know, so yeah, I mean, the answer is yes, you can. I mean,
and that kind of corresponds, not kind of, it corresponds directly to the feeling of doing a podcast where you can suddenly, it's like, you mean I can say anything
correct.
I want? You mean I can do anything I want?
It's just like a blog, too, and the name of the conference is BloggerCon. So it would be ridiculous to have gone through all this trouble to be independent through our web blogs only to turn the whole thing over to a bunch of technology companies. I mean, that would be... It wouldn't work. It wouldn't happen. I mean,
well, it was, you know, uncomfortable and worth every moment.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. Yeah. So, overall, were you pleased with the conference? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it was too short.
Really?
And at the same time, I had...
Really?
Well, I put my head down this afternoon just to relax for a couple minutes. Yeah, and but what my point is that I'm saying it was too short. Yet at the same time, I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. I mean, I heard a lot of people say, "Well, that was, you know, felt like a week," but you know, that was a good week.
My
it was very intense on an emotional level, which I don't think people really picked up on until after the fact. You know, people like
could it's tell. So interesting. He wasn't here for the first part. That's exactly the only thing that matters at the conference. Is that's because it had an emotional dimension. And most conferences try to stifle that, so the emotions go out of the room, you know, and they become one-on-one conversations, usually about frustration is what people talk about when they're in the hallway, when they can't, like, be heard in the main room, you know. So that it was emotional, to me, means that it worked.
Well, you know, I was sitting next to Ross Rader, is that his name, last night?
Yeah, from 2000.
The guy just to my right, to your left.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah.
And... he was talking about the first source code that he heard was the one where you talked about your mother.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he was, you know, he was transported. The way I described it to him was, yeah, this is not a toy. This is real life.
Yeah.
This, you know, and there was just this enormous amount of power and emotion and, you know, suddenly entering this new dimension for him, and he just realized that this is a whole lot more powerful than just some sort of Wayne's World or whatever. Not to put Wayne's World down,
Wayne's World is great. Yeah. Yes,
I think that was that came across in the conference. It came in waves. It would, you know, ebb and flow, of course. But I mean, you know, I can't wait to hear some of the. Of the podcast,
yeah,
like the Larry Lessig session.
Yeah,
I really want to hear that.
Did you?
No, I was in the, you know, the quote making money session, and so
that
I'm
was a good one. I thought that worked pretty well.
I was amazed that you allowed Doc to use a PowerPoint.
He asked about it. He asked, you know, to his credit, and. That just says that there's no rule that is without exception. I mean, basically, the reason why I don't allow PowerPoints is because most people use PowerPoints as crutches because they're terrified to stand up in front of a room and be...
He was using one, like a banner.
Right, but he's not like that at all. Yeah. I mean, Doc is a professional speaker and you know, he's not
good... He's a professional stand-up comedian as well.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is that, you know, the reason I don't let people do it is because it's just... It's ridiculous. Go through your fear. Be scared. That's fine. You're going to survive this. It's not going to be terrible. And you'll.
We were all wondering there when.
You'll be a billion percent better if you're. What? You're wondering what?
When, you know, the.
Why the PowerPoint was permitted. Is that.
No. I'm just teasing you about whether we were all going to survive it when you put the mic down and we're.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of
that was pretty
prowling cool. around in the back of the room there. That was pretty intense.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
I don't think you were there.
No, I wasn't. I've only heard about it.
Yeah.
Well, you want to know something, Steve? I owe you a personal debt of gratitude. Well, for many reasons, but another one yesterday was I couldn't leave the room until somebody said what you said, which is that you support where I was at. Okay? At that moment, right, I could pick up and go to the next session and let the best. Happened, you know. I understand people were confused about what had happened there, and what were the ground rules. You know, that was a lot of confusion. We knew that this was the session that was going to be the problem. We knew it. I mean, I spent, you know, days talking with Scoble about this one. He wanted to wear an Apple T-shirt. I said, "No, Scoble,
you don't wear an Apple t-shirt. Why? You know, because we don't really want to get fired. Here. Yeah, yeah, a guy works at Microsoft. He thinks it's cool to be in Silicon Valley wearing it. But
hey, I'm taking pictures of the Apple's Macs coming into the bay.
It was supposed to happen. What happened there was supposed to happen, Steve. In other words,
here's Dave with his "I planned it all."
Well, I knew that there was going to be that tension was going to be in the building. It's like the making money session had to be there too, okay? Because otherwise, like I said in the opening, it's like if you don't have it there, every session's going to be about it, you know? If you didn't have the vendors, you know, in the room without calling it the vendor session, right? Then that tension would have been in every session. More or less, they would have been spread around, and it never would have happened. You know, and that it did happen in Scott Rosenberg's session as well. Okay,
really? I wasn't there for that.
But it was a non-event. Scott called on me. The guy was starting to talk about a site of his. I was sitting in the back, and Scott said, "Dave, what should I do?" And literally, what I said to him is, "I trust you, Scott." Okay. And then Scott said, "Please, let's move on. I'll go to the next guy. No problem." It was talked about later. Was explained to the guy that basically this was just, you know, a judgment call. We don't know if we were right or wrong. But, you know,
I mean, it needed to be learned how to be handled.
Right.
On the part of all parties.
Correct. And now the thing is that journalists deal with this all the time. This is, you know, no big deal for a journalist to figure out where somebody's conflict of interest lies and ask them not to walk right into it. You know, for a journalist journalists have to be conspicuous. Now, there's nothing wrong with technologists doing the same damn thing. There's nothing wrong.
You know, the blogosphere has permanently erased the boundaries between journalists and developers and users. That's my opinion. So, you know, everybody has to examine those.
We all have to be aware, right? Yeah. We have to disclose our interests that are relevant to the discussion that we're having, and and even that's not always black and white as whether you can even disclose the conflicts of interest. Sometimes you can't, right? And then you have to exercise judgment on whether or not you should even have an opinion or state an opinion about this particular subject. If you can't disclose the conflict of interest, then you maybe want to just recuse yourself and not say anything. Which is kind of what, you know, err on the side of just listening was not a bad approach. It was what the Six Apart people, I talked with Ben and Mina before the session and said, you know, there is a rule, I just want to make sure you're aware of it, that, you know, vendors aren't allowed to talk about their own products. And they said basically we're quiet people anyway, so it's not a problem for us. I talked with Scott Johnson at Feedster, and Scott actually thanked me for doing it. He said, "I'm not the kind of person who promotes my own products in public like that, and it always disturbs me when my competitors do it because it's a line that I won't cross." So, you know, I love the idea that we could bring, you know, the same, like you said, the same kind of integrity that you see in journalism, the same sensitivity to, you know, not non-disclosed conflicts of interest and making room for the people who are really have the most at stake, which are the users, to drive the process. You know.
And on the other side, something that came up in the politics session, basically, you know, the conflicts of interest on the journalist side. There's slowly creeping into the ecosystem, if you will, the understanding that that nobody is free of an opinion, least of all the journalists.
But journalists are allowed to have an opinion.
Well, I have always thought so, but
no, no. 20 years ago, that would.
If you look at the rules, I should look on Google. I guarantee you that what's the journalist organization? Where can I look at their charter? What a journalist is, and it's, I guarantee you.
Adam, that's one interesting thing. There really isn't one.
Oh, in Holland, there is.
Not here.
Oh, really? They have like a medical review board for journalists.
No, there's no professional organization.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that exists in Holland.
Oh, no, not here.
Yeah, and if you can hardly sue anyone. For
that came up at the journalism session. That there's no certification process. There's no board of ethics. There's no form of redress.
Okay.
There's no place to take it. I suggested this at the journalism session. I said, let's do a blind study, okay? And
You know, take 20 news articles, okay? And before the journalist writes the article, he puts in a sealed envelope what his opinion is about that subject, okay? Oh, and it goes in a sealed envelope. Then he writes a story and he publishes it, and then you get 20 readers to read it. Mm-hmm. Read the article. Tell me what you think his opinion is on this subject. I guarantee you.
I'm sorry. I just moved the mic and it went...
Well, in that case...
I'm sorry.
Anyway, I guarantee you that we could tell you exactly what the guy believes just by reading the article.
Sure.
You know, so it might as well be disclosed. That contents of that envelope...
Is there no school of journalism?
There are lots of schools of journalism. Absolutely. There's a school of journalism at Stanford.
Right.
But, you know, the good journalists don't go to schools of journalism.
Yeah. I'm just saying that I have always read that a journalist's job is to get the facts, check the facts, and that your own opinion is allowed.
No, in the United States, the old...
I'm not saying I agree with it.
Right.
I'm saying that's...
Right. The old school... We had this came up at the DNC. Walter Mears, who was a reporter, old-time reporter for the Associated Press, was presented to us at the Blogger's Breakfast as being the AP blogger, okay?
Right.
And so he... Well, I mean, but he's a respectful people, you know... I mean, it's clear that people respect this guy. He's an institution. And so David Weinberger asked him, who David was one of the Clue Train authors, blogger, now he's a fellow at Berkman Center, asked him, who do you support for president? You know, and Mears said, I can't tell you that. If I did, then I would be, you know, revealing some lack of objectivity. And
you should disclose that.
You should or you shouldn't?
Should.
Yeah, well, because you're a blogger.
Yeah.
You see it that way.
Yeah.
Now, a journalist sees it the other way.
Right,
you can't disclose it. You have to report. You know, you have to report as if you didn't have an opinion. But I say, and you say, and Weinberger says, and bloggers in general say, you need to tell me who you're going to vote for so I know that I can subtract that from what you've written. It's almost a mathematical thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I got a comment today on my blog.
What's the URL? Come on, plug it.
I have no idea what the URL is.
What?
The base camp, if you will, is blogs.zdnet.com.
Okay.
And it's probably /Gilmore with a capital G.
Don't you think you should know the URL of your blog?
You know, I'm new to this business.
That was the thing Mears did, too. People asked him, what's the URL of your blog? I hate to tell you this, Steve. He didn't know either.
No, I know, but I don't know to be able to spell it out on... This is a Trade Secrets or a...
Trade Secrets.
So I want to know, what is Trade Secrets? You promised on the first broadcast of Trade Secrets that you were going to...
Tell the story.
On some future date, you were going to explain what it really means.
Oh.
And all of that stuff. That's what I want to hear.
All right. It was a bar I was going to start in Palo Alto, actually.
It's true.
And the idea was this, is that, first of all, when I first came here, and I can say here because we're here, right? In 1979, I kept looking for the center of Silicon Valley. I'd go all over the place and go, where is it, you know? And couldn't ever find it. There was no, like, you know, in New York it's Times Square, in San Francisco it's Union Square, or, or the Fisherman's Wharf or whatever. Here, there was no place, so I thought there needed to be a center, and so I thought, let's open a bar, and the benchmark would be, this is where programmers would go to get laid, which is a little clue was, I was a programmer, and I was trying to get laid, okay, and I hope
like
he,
something
I hope
has changed
he forgives
over
me.
The years.
I
yeah, really.
My model, my
he's doing whole conferences to get laid.
He used to do that. It doesn't work anymore. But my benchmark, I hope he doesn't hate me for this, was that Andy Hertzfeld would be like, you know, Andy Hertzfeld could go to Trade Secrets, and, you know, the image was a beautiful woman's hand in a back pocket of blue jeans, of Andy Hertzfeld's blue jeans, basically, and this is where developers and users would go to party together in a whole different way. And since everybody in Silicon Valley was so secretive and, you know, basically you had to sign non-disclosures, I thought, you know, a cute name for the bar would be Trade Secrets. It's a double entendre. You know?
Okay,
you
blogs.
Go to Trade Secrets. It's about
dot
Trade
ZDNet. What? Blogs.zdnet.com.
Right.
/ Gilmore.
Scroll up.
Oh, I'm clicking to go to it.
So how do you edit your blog, Steve?
He has to call his secretary.
Well, I can't edit my...
The potosphere! He's claiming the
picture.
Potosphere. He's coining
no,
it.
I had to regrow my beard.
We've heard about that.
And then I have to...
So you have to grow the beard back
because
the picture...
Because the picture...
Not here's a bearded picture. But they stretch it, like Ann Wilson and Hart.
And look, I've got hair here.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
Not here.
Yeah. And I see
over
it.
Here.
I see it. I was doing a comparison. Now, you look kind of weak here.
Yeah, that was...
You look much stronger.
I think that was about 2 months after I got fired from InfoWorld.
Okay.
So I was like...
Cool.
You've been fired from some of the best places.
Where's your RSS feed?
All of them. I'm running out of places to get fired from.
Where's your RSS feed?
No, that's a good question.
He doesn't have one, Adam.
Of course I do. It just doesn't work. What's that guy's name?
What's the difference between having one that doesn't work and not having one?
All RSS feeds.
Well,
no.
About 6 months.
Hey, it's a 2.0 feed. So you can do enclosures?
Of course it is.
Can you do enclosures?
Well, I thought so. What is the guy's name that we were talking to last night? From the guy who wrote WordPress is now...
Matthew Mulloway.
He's a CNET guy. This is a CNET publication.
Cool.
And, no, he can help you with that.
So like Vignette?
They're not using Vignette.
Derivative
not for
this. No, this is WordPress that they're using.
Is that what it is?
Okay.
Yeah, they're using
the developer
software.
The WordPress developer was
and
there at BloggerCon yesterday. The guy who made it?
Matthew Mulloway. Yeah,
right.
I talked with him.
Yeah, and I said, I just want you to know that I got the chairman of the Socialist Party in Holland to blog, and he says, using WordPress, and the whole Socialist Party is on WordPress.
That makes sense. Why would they use a
How many parties are there in Holland?
Oh, God.
I mean, is this a big party in Holland?
It's gaining a lot of traction. Yeah, it's the fastest growing party, for sure.
And what's the reigning party?
This is the problem, I think, in Holland. You have to build a coalition. So, most people voted for the Labour Party. However, the coalition, which is, is the Christian Democrats and the kind of right of center Democrats, and they together have more voters than Labour Party, so they are coalition, and Labour Party is now the opposition, and this doesn't work,
right?
And so they call it purple. That's our governments are purple because it's kind of like red.
Those
and
of
blue
us
and
who can't see my eyes, they've rolled into the back
back
of the
yeah,
head.
Yeah, well, it's fucked up. Fucked up. And so the Socialist Party are also, of course, opposition.
But now they've got the internet and the blogging thing.
And it's making...
Are they going to...
Well, you know what it is? It's
jump into the potosphere next?
I don't know about that. I mean, I'm not doing anything for Holland anymore. Fuck them. I'm tired. No, I can't contribute to that country anymore. We went to that last night.
Yeah.
I talked about...
Yeah, we had
the
a couple of those...
Proverbs, Dutch proverbs, which is
the second one in particular. I thought was really
which is boven het maaiveld uitgroeien. So that means any blade of grass that grows above the rest gets chopped off immediately.
And you know, since you're six, what?
And I'm smoking grass. You know, that's really bad.
Well, there are lots of tall people in Holland. Holland is one of those weird countries, right?
I mean, yeah.
They grow them pretty tall there. So he's not. I mean, he's not exceptionally tall in Holland. He's really tall for
here.
But
it's clear what is meant by the...
Yeah, no, first time I heard that one, it gave me chills. You told that story at the bloggers dinner we had in Amsterdam.
And Pandango was there, and he was agreeing.
They all agreed with it, yeah.
And
they also explained to me that, you know, there's no big deal. People don't stop for celebrities. That basically it's...
It's the same thing. If you're not acting normal, fuck you.
Yeah.
Celebrities are hated. Because you're a celebrity, and therefore you're acting differently. It's gotten better over the years, but not much.
Interesting. But Holland was a very successful commercial country. It still
it
is.
It was. No.
It's not anymore?
It used to be the gateway to Europe with the Rotterdam Harbor. That's the number one thing. They built Schiphol Airport, which was also intended to be a gateway to Europe. And either you choose for your environment, and Schiphol Airport is 3 yards below sea level, reclaimed land, or you're going to choose for commerce and economy. And so they've limited everything on the airport. The airport can't expand, so okay, that's fine, but then realize that that's going to Frankfurt, and so that traffic is going away, and you're no longer the connecting hub, and, air traffic is, that's very interesting business, and routes and all that shit.
Uh-huh.
They can't expand the harbor either. Now, Antwerp Harbor is kicking their ass.
they built this $15 billion railroad, which is still not completed, which was supposed to extend. You come into the harbor, and then you ship everything through Germany with trains and water and every way you can. And, you know, the builders have ripped off the government to no end. You know, this is all coming up as now we have whistleblowers and, you know, shadow accounting showing up in big garbage bags. And, it's, you know, what's happening is, and this is partly due to blogs, provably so, is the shit's starting to flow to the top. You know, we're finding out that everyone's corrupt. It's a very small country, so it's a lot easier to see it all happen. So the only thing they really have, there's no more defense industry. They're barely a part of the Joint Strike Fighter. Not that I'm condoning that, but, you know, it's money, right? That's how a country makes money. They're not a part of that. They've kicked out the final guy who actually, you know, built submarines. And so the only, the sugar industry is kept high artificially.
What sugar industry? Were they grow
sugar? Sugar beets.
Oh, okay.
So 1 ton of sugar in Europe, that's not just Holland, in Europe, costs $600. The world price, the world market price is $200. So, you know, they're in a closed little loop there. And the only thing that I guarantee you Holland is the number one supplier of is marijuana and ecstasy. Mm-hmm. And every day in the paper, you know, someone is, you know, 300 plants are being taken out of some apartment. That's what everyone's doing. Everyone's growing weed.
Why are they taking the plants out?
Well, because it's illegal. You're not allowed to grow weed in your house.
You're allowed to smoke it, though.
Yeah. I mean, this is... Well,
it's not
that's
legal,
also,
actually.
It is illegal.
Yeah.
It's illegal in Holland.
Yeah.
But this is what they call gedoogbeleid, which means permission policy. Of course, that's not the only thing that there's permission policy in, which is, you know... So, eventually, laws aren't being enforced.
I want to ask Steve a question. What's it like watching Adam talk after having listened to him on the podcast so much? I mean, you're sitting right across from him.
Well, it was a little like you were telling me this at the conference yesterday, that there's this odd quality of disembodiedness.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was mostly last night. In this context, it's beginning to feel... I mean, I have this weird sensation that comes from this whole space, which is that...
Excuse me, on trade secrets we can't say.
Yeah, I know. Space, that's because sorry, Steve, you've been pissing all over me about this. That's me,
well, what's
show
play,
with
man?
The soliloquy guy.
What's
your play?
Well, okay. Let's all do the soliloquy together. Yeah. This land is your land. This land is...
All right, I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. But I do it intentionally.
Yeah.
Well, you have a very distinctive voice, Steve.
Yeah.
So you do.
Yeah, well, you know...
Is it a radio voice, or is it that's just your voice?
I did radio once.
Did you?
Yeah. In Charleston, when I was living there, I did an AM radio, you know, technology show.
Charleston?
South Carolina.
South Carolina.
Yeah, that's where we moved to have and bring up our children from New York City.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, similar kind
of
sensation there. But not for the schools.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we moved out here.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck to us. The schools out here are a challenge as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, getting your kids into them is a challenge.
Higher educational system.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
Getting into them, you know.
I'm having that problem in England now. And I'm not a celebrity. It used to be like, hi, I'm Adam Curry. Sure, your kid's in. And now it's like, well, hello. Fuck you.
So, so I was on the radio there. But, you know, I was producing a record with Procter and Bergman, two of the Firesign, and I was in the studio and I was trying to get Bergman to do a line reading, which of course he didn't appreciate.
What's a line reading?
You know, I was basically, I forget what the line was, but I said, well, no, like this.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
And Peter says, that's very good, Steve, but, you know, it's my record.
Yeah.
So, I know how to do it, but... I don't think this is about radio voices.
No.
In fact, the thing that I notice with almost everybody is, you know, when you hear your when you're a kid and for the first time you heard your voice on a tape and it's like, ooh, I sound like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't the ooh thing, but I hear Steve, and of course it's different than MP3. It's a different timbre.
Interesting. Well, certainly.
What eventually happens is your mind will recognize it and you won't hear the difference anymore because now I've heard it. But I had never had that information, and everyone. Sounded different, but what you have as well, Dave,
is you have, and I have it too, it's just there's a certain frequency range that's low that microphones like to pick up, and that is actually very comforting for listeners.
You know, I think it's actually a learned characteristic. Because I think it goes to what you were talking about, which is when you first hear yourself on a recording, it sounds like, you know, if you do an experiment and put your finger in
like that,
you can hear the resonance in the bones. All that stuff is gone.
Right.
So you don't hear that on a recording.
My voice sounds a lot better when I'm talking than it does to me than when I hear it through a speaker. I mean, I am very nasal when I talk. You know, when I hear it through the speaker, then being nasal doesn't come through for me when I'm listening to myself.
Put that in for you.
No. The nasal is there. It's just not here. I feel like my voice is like not nasal at all. But then, and I hear it on the podcast.
You know, the thing is that I think that as you start to do this, you start to learn how to kind of put
that
back in.
That's something I wanted to say. That's something I wanted to say.
Yeah, that
you never sense. You never listen to your own show. Rarely.
No, that's not true. Not rarely. No, I very often do. You know, what I do is like I record it and I then add the ID3 information.
Mm-hmm.
Then I upload it, and while it's uploading it, I listen to it.
Okay.
Right.
And but
after
I noticed
it's uploaded, I
when
download.
You did your when you did your show about the open sourcing of Frontier, that was a real breakthrough for you. Because you weren't concerned about, I mean, I don't know, I'm not going to psychoanalyze it. All I'm saying is that was akin to Adam's show about his mother, because all of a sudden
you weren't doing anything with recording at all.
No, this was about your life and your life's work, and it was compelling, and
once you do
that kind of thing, it's part of your aura from that point on.
And that's what we have to keep reminding ourselves, because that's where we're talking about this, you know, the reality radio, that's really where this is coming from.
That was, we had a breakfast this morning where we were trying to come up with the elevator pitch for, you know, non-techie type people as to what is this stuff, what's the significance of podcasting. And
so we came up with what we're doing. Podcasting is the radio equivalent of what reality did for television.
Reality radio?
Yeah. It's a lot more, but right now that's what everyone is latching onto and is loving.
Well, it's all bootstrapping, so you know, whatever works to get to the next phase is
better
probably
software
okay.
Is going
to
help.
Better software is very important, actually.
So what did you think about the conference?
Well, nobody's asked me that.
That's how we started an hour and 8 minutes ago.
You sure? You asked me that?
Well, you know what? No one's listening anymore, so answer it.
No, nobody's asked me point blank that way, okay? I've certainly talked about what I think of the conference, but it's not come quite that way. I have mixed feelings about it, actually, and not the things that you might think that, I told you I expected that there would be some conflict. I also expected there would be mixed quality. I don't want to like rate one session or another, but there was mixed quality, and it's getting bigger, and the blogosphere is getting bigger, so the idealism is fading, I think. So it's not quite so obvious sometimes that there's an idealistic answer to a question and the mundane answer, and sometimes we end up stuck on the mundane answer, and that I find that very frustrating. Because what I want is I want to be inspired by people who are thinking really big.
All the time.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, all the time on a day that you come to be inspired, you know. This is not every day, right? I mean, you know, for most people, at most, you've had three of these days in your life. Steve, this is the first BloggerCon you've been to, so you've had one.
Well, that's not true, but, you know.
Oh, because you did the webcast.
I was there virtually. Yeah.
Right, but I think it's different. I think it's very different whether you're there by the webcast. But I don't know, because I've never done the webcast for BloggerCon myself. I haven't done it.
Well, so, I mean, I had a sort of maybe a 2.5 experience out of 3 in absorbing the first one, because I was sort of vacillating between the insanely variant audio feed the official audio feed, and Kevin Marks with his little eyesight camera.
I think we finally got that this time. I think we actually had a webcam.
Oh, was there a video?
Yeah.
No, not video. No, we don't
do it. There was also a video webcam. I think Kevin Marks' stuff was going out as well.
Kevin wasn't there.
Kevin Marks wasn't there.
No, he was at home.
I think J.D. Laska had a camera at one point.
Well, see, that's the dimension of BloggerCon that I never get, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't get the IRC dimension.
Well, anyway, it's not about me. I was asking you.
Right. And let's see. Right. So, but, you know, I don't think that's that different from the others. I mean, there's always, it's not as inspiring as I would like it to be, but, you know. But then again, you know, you find your inspiration in whatever you are inspired by, right? The fact that all these people come together in itself is pretty cool. I think the format, I'm going to look for sort of some new things we can try with format. I don't know what they are yet, but I don't like the microphones.
Yeah, I'm going to push back on you about that because, you know, while we were doing it, and by that I mean particularly when your session and I was
let me
the point. Right. And because you've already said this on the microphone that you didn't want the microphones again.
No, I didn't say that. I wasn't totally happy with them. Okay.
Okay. All I'm saying is that, you know, that was, you called this, you know, kind of, it was a Woodstock for the Podosphere, you know?
Right. There's, and that was
the, and the way that that works, to give people in that room on an equal basis the ability to be able to put their voice out into the room and over the podcast.
It was really more for the podcast.
That's a really good thing.
But then we can do a lot better than that.
Absolutely.
I think we ought to get together and talk about that, okay?
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. We've got a room here right now, and we're not waiting for somebody to come with a microphone, right?
Right,
and
there's so no latency here.
Right, and so
except on my headphones.
I want to tell you another, I want to tell you a little story. I know we're going to go probably way, way over here, right? I
mean, yeah, it doesn't matter.
But this doesn't have to fit on a CD, right? Okay. Anyway.
Pod boys.
Not open up.
Pod boys.
Okay, I'll tell you, there's one
thing. How big is your dick?
I really, really spent a lot of time with Doug Kay at this conference. I really, really got to like Doug, you know, and that was nice. So I can make, I feel like I can make a little fun of him now. So, I went to a non-disclosed event at Microsoft, which you're aware of, you know, a few weeks ago. And I'm not going to say what the event was about or anything, but I want to tell you a little anecdote. At one point during the event, there were 20 people in the room screaming at the Microsoft people, okay? And it freaked them out, of course. I mean, but the screaming wasn't like, you stupid idiots. The screaming was, this is what we want you to do, and this is why we want you to do it, and I want you to do this, and I want you to... You could discern from all the different threads that were going on at the same time different ideas. In other words, it wasn't just that people were screaming. They were saying things. They were excited. They finally had figured it out. It was great. And so one of the guys from Microsoft gets up. This is not a blogger. None of the Microsoft people except for Scoble were bloggers, okay? So that means that there were 30 Microsoft people in the room. Only Scoble was a blogger, and he pretty much kept quiet. He said, no, everybody talk one at a time. And I screamed out. I said, we're bloggers. We, you know, just... This is the way it works. You know, it's like we're going to scream, and you got to fucking listen to what we're saying. Because it had been so polite up to that point, and they just simply weren't hearing what we were saying. So at that point, at least we could hear what we were saying, okay? And then it was like a real, you know, I was telling Adam before about Stacey Kramer and about how she had a real moment when she totally objected to something I said, and she said it in a very sort of opinionated way, and she immediately said, oh, I'm sorry. And I said, no, that's no problem. A little humanity came out. We like that. That's good. You know, it's like what you're saying about the emotions, right? I mean, people are being real when the emotions come out. So,
there's also some good ideas that, you know, don't come out under controlled circumstances.
That's what I'm saying. And that the blogosphere is not about waiting for the microphone to show up. It's almost the opposite of that.
Yeah.
It's this cacophony, this mess of ideas just thrown out, you know, and God, I hope somebody can hear this. There's a lot of that to blogging, right?
And when you pretend that we're so orderly and we can wait for the microphone, then you start getting the speech effect. And I heard that a lot of times. It's like, well, wait, I've got five things to say. But if you were like that, you wouldn't have five things to say because you wouldn't have had a moment to prepare.
But isn't that just a technical problem?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I think it's only a technical problem.
Well, and it may be that the next BloggerCon that we do...
Everyone comes mic'd.
Maybe, but I have a different idea, okay? Which is... that we vary the format radically, and we don't like lessen the commitment to this format. We just do one interim that is a completely different format, okay? And maybe it's podcast or blogathon or something like that. And what you do is you rent a small room, a conference room somewhere, okay? A small enough room so that miking it up isn't a problem, right? Okay, and the acoustics are good, and you don't try to do even a whole day, okay? You try to do something like what we're doing right now, and you try to make something coherent come out of, you know, 10 people in a room focused on a specific thing. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, a specific issue, a problem that needs to be solved, something like that. And you try to come out of it with the kind of focus that the blogosphere is capable of doing, you know, and try to see if you can't make that happen in a real-time audio way. And I think that if you can, what comes out the other end is some incredible programming. I mean, just you'll watch the problem be solved. And that's, I think, in solving that problem, you end up providing the template for what Jon Stewart was looking for from CNN Crossfire.
You know, it's kind of, you know, it's jazz is what it is. It's, you know, it's people. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know,
it's improv.
There's a guy who used to, was the producer of Al Green. I've forgotten his name for a second, but he has this recording technique where he folds back all the monitor feed into the drum kit and into the room. So you basically sit in a circle.
What's the drum kit? The drums?
The drums.
He takes the monitor feed
he
and...
He takes, you know, the...
He
in
puts
other words,
the speaker inside the drums.
He puts the speakers not inside. He feeds back into...
Willie Mitchell?
Exactly. And...
Ta-da.
thank you, Google.
No, fuck you. I knew that.
Hey, we're slowly finding where the knowledge
where it
overlaps.
Comes from. Oh, yeah. No, okay.
Yeah.
The power of pure intellect.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, forget the technical level. You know, the thing that really works is that the overtones coming from acoustic guitars and vocals being pushed into the cymbals create overtones which are unmatched. It's, you know, it's a sound that is instantly recognizable, and it's one of the reasons that the you know the backbeat in you know Willie Mitchell's and the Al, the guy who died, who was the drummer in those days. It has this kind of feel that you cannot get from overdubbing, from you know essentially having
what's
people,
overdubbing?
You know, recording once. One at a time and overdubbing.
Oh, okay.
In other words, you don't hear what the other person, you're not listening to what the other person's playing and interacting with that person and vice versa.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing.
That would be Kenny Buttrey?
No. Okay, now you're...
Al
now
Jackson?
Al Jackson. He was the...
Right, so which is...
The drummer in the original...
Booker T and the MGs.
Very good. So what I'm saying is that you know the only pushback I'd give you is that 10 people, you know, who are the 10 people? There's going to be
right. Does that become an A-list?
390
no,
people.
No, you would do it deliberately so it wasn't an
right.
A-list.
Right.
That wouldn't be the point at all. And there are ways, by the way, we found ways to dampen the A-list. Right. That was the dinners last night.
Yeah.
The choice of the discussion leaders.
Yeah.
They weren't chosen for their celebrity. I think that. Not one blogger knew who Craig Klein was. But Craig is an incredible discussion leader. He has so much experience with it. And he
one was his?
This was the mobile blogging one. But Craig, the thing about Craig is that, you know, a good discussion leader might very well be somebody with a personality that you can hardly even find, you know? The point is that he's supposed to make the discussion happen, right? Not impress you with his personality. Right, so Craig, you know, we tried different things. You know, was Lessig a good discussion leader? I think he was. And I don't want to, you know,
You know, that
the politics one. All right, let's go straight there. That one, everybody seems to have thought. I mean, there was a controversy there. I didn't catch it. I wasn't there for that.
Is it Ed Cohn's session?
Yeah. And had I been there, I would have totally agreed with what the guy said.
I wouldn't characterize it as a controversy. It was a fairly mellow.
That's the problem. Session. It shouldn't have been a mellow session. It should have been one
people
of these.
People were exhausted from the, you know, this.
Yeah, but we did the session after that, the Making Money session. And with a little bit of stimulus, we were able to get that session to really rock, okay? To the point where it wasn't just like, let's not talk about the nickels and dimes. This is Making Money, right? Well, when we're talking about Making Money, why should we talk about nickels and dimes when there are millions of dollars on the table? You know, picking up nickels and dimes on the floor is not really the, you know. But, yeah, a lot of people like to talk about the nickels and dimes and think big, you know.
And I just talk people to think.
I know it's not
easy.
I know, and that's the thing.
You saw my friend Ron Blum that's really struggling. He's a big ass thinker,
right?
But old school.
But right, and that's the point of bringing people together and into one building for 12 hours and saying this one day we're going to stretch those minds,
sure.
And we're going to see if we can't get you know, there are some people, by the way, who can think big who came, like Keith Teer, okay? Keith is a big thinker, he's got a big mind, but he doesn't know that much about blogs. So he came, he got his one-day education on blogs, and all of a sudden his brain is exploding with ideas.
Right. But it takes people
but this is
you
what
need to ramp up. Even if you're
a guy like him doesn't need that much
No, but there are a lot of people there.
Absolutely. So what you do is you open the door for anybody of any type. Be surprised. Nobody's an architecture of human nature. I mean, or an architect of human nature. You can't. You don't live long enough to learn how to do that, right? If we lived 500 years, you might learn how to architect human nature and use it in a more effective way. But none of us do, so we don't learn how to do that. What you do is you open the door up and you try to throw some big ideas into the room, and then you sort of let whatever happens. And so you may get one person who knows a lot about the blogosphere but never thought about it this way, okay? Or another person who knows nothing about the blogosphere but is always thinking expansively. So I thought what we would do, that session, I thought we'd put Doc Searles. Now, Doc totally gets it. I think Doc is sometimes really frustrated that he can't get other people to get it. You know, the Clue Train Manifesto to me, when I first even heard the idea and read the manifesto itself, you know, we the people of the earth, that thing, okay? I mean, I'm like the third signatory on the damn thing, and I said, basically, guys, you got to know I believe in this shit, right? I mean, to me, it was a total fucking no-brainer, you know, that you want to turn the funnel upside down. You want to let the stuff, the good stuff pour in any which way it wants to come, you know, and you don't worry about it. You don't think in terms of a top of a mountain and great ideas flowing down and out, because that's the old model, right? The new model is I don't care where the ideas come from. They can come from anywhere, you know? And that's why be picky. If you
can I ask you a question today? Have you noticed in your life, both of you are older than I am, that as you get older and wiser as to what the world is, I find that almost every process, almost everything that I held to believe to be true, it all has to be turned upside down.
What? No, wait. Okay. You know, everything you believe to be true.
Any process, I look at it and I say, if I did
everything
turn
you believe
around,
to be true, Adam, was true. Okay? You may have had some small things that were misconceptions that made me go like, I'm the center of the universe, okay? Life teaches you that you're not the center of the universe and you aren't going to live forever, okay? But you, everything you believed was true. It all was true.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lose that. That's not what life teaches you. Life doesn't teach you you were wrong.
I think you're misunderstanding
okay.
what I'm saying.
All right, fair enough.
I'm going to the cone concept.
Okay.
Cone concept is, you know, I've always looked at it exactly right. You know, it comes from the top and it goes down. That's the way most things seem to work, but they don't. It seems like if you turn it around, it works much, much better.
Right.
But I found that in technical processes, it's like users and developers. We have to reverse the process.
Tell you what. Yes, you do. But the thing is, you always have to reverse it, whichever way you have it turned. The creative mind can conceive of everything working differently. Mm-hmm. And that's where...
Okay, then maybe that's what
it is. And it's like, right. And it's like, so if it's structured this way,
you may find some new territory if you flip it around and structure it the other way. Okay. So you are a creative thinker, Adam. Okay.
And is my creativity growing as I grow older?
Will you? I don't know if your creativity grows as you grow older.
Really?
I don't know about that. I created some personally created some really good shit when I was really young. Mm-hmm. I think that in some ways my
The classic statement is that you have this burst of Orson Wellesian creativity when you're young, and then you sort of settle into it.
That's one way.
I'm not sure that that's true.
You have a different motive when you're younger. Okay, young overachiever type people. When they're in their 20s, especially males, have to prove their right. It's like it's like you have to win something. You have to fight a war and you have to win. And I had that. I felt really strongly, and I see it in a lot of other men. I don't see it so much in women. I don't understand women to that extent. That what's driving them at that age. It's really hard to know. You can only go by.
You need to listen to the Super Smart Poor Sex Radio Show.
Okay.
That will teach you a lot about what drives
I'm women. Always, I'm fascinated with women, right?
That's a podcast you got to check
okay.
out.
Okay. I mean, that's the thing about us men. We don't understand them, but we're endlessly fascinated.
I've learned a lot.
Right. Good. Well, that's saying a lot, too.
I learned a hell of a lot.
All right. Yeah. Well, they're willing to teach us. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. We like that.
Precisely.
It's just different. I think that as you grow older, you deepen, and this is cliched, right? But you deepen, and you also have a better sense of humor, and you're not so worried about things that you were worried about when you were younger. You relax. It seems paradoxical. As you get older, you're getting closer to death, right? It would seem like you'd be in more of a rush than you were when you were younger, but it doesn't work that way.
There's this, when you reach a certain age, there's this. If you reach a certain age, there's this kind of glow, a calm that comes from the fact that, holy shit, I actually, I'm not so hormone-driven, I'm not so, driven by what Dave was just talking about, or there's a calm and a confidence
at a younger
that comes
age,
from experience.
I never could have handled that.
That allows you to be able to appreciate life a little bit better.
Yeah.
At a younger age, I never, ever in a million years could have handled that last session.
Right.
Because there's that guy standing up there, and he's throwing something at my... He wants something from me that isn't... He's not being direct about what he's saying. So my sort of imagination would run wild, right? And this is something I noticed when I was, in my late 30s, early 40s. The thought that would form in my head was, oh, he's acting just like my father.
Whoa.
Yeah. It would happen. I mean, literally, that thought would form in my head. And then the next thought is, I respond to my father.
Right.
Okay?
And that's not necessarily always fun.
Oh, God, no. No, it's terribly not fun because it's not my father, and he doesn't know what he's supposed to do next.
Yeah.
And he probably doesn't do it. And he's probably talking to his father, and
Okay.
And so what you end up with is two, dead people, basically. And so at that moment,
I can't wait to hear that podcast.
That's the dead people podcast.
Yeah,
dead people podcast.
So what you do in a situation like that is you take five deep breaths, right, and while the guy's talking, and then you check out the room. You see, okay, this is where I am. There's a window there. There are 200 people sitting all around this place. I'm going to look at their faces and see how they're doing, And then I'm going to listen at the same time to every word this guy says. And I'm going to make sure that I don't respond to anything I don't have to.
That's the thing that maybe you wouldn't have done when you were younger.
Right.
Is force yourself to listen.
Yeah.
That's very hard.
That's
the hard
part. But that's the important thing. That's what this guy really wants.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He wants that more than he wants the fight. Although he really wants the fight. I mean, think about what he was doing, okay? Because the risk for him is that he's going to destroy this conference. It's going to turn into bedlam, right? We're all going to go there where he is, right? And it's all going to get destroyed. He doesn't really want that. What he wants is he wants somebody to understand that he's hurting, that this hurt his feelings, and that he didn't like it. So what you got to do is, but without recognizing that there's so many other people there, I don't want to bring it into that dimension, but I want to validate it. I want to say, I'm not going to,
object to anything that you said, except for the fact that you say I attacked you, because that's just not realistic. I was standing here 40 feet away from where you are. There was no attack going on here, you know. And I could have made a mistake too. I hope I said that. I was thinking that I need to say that I could have been mistaken. I don't insist that I had to be right.
I don't know. Well, we'll know.
Yeah. Well, that, no doubt that people will listen to those words very carefully. And
I think you might have, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that from his point of view. You see, you can put everything on that and say that there were many points of view of that event, you know. Lots of people saw all kinds of different things there. Yeah. I know what I was thinking was, I was expecting this to happen, and this is, you know, not a surprise, and it's going to fall to me to do it. This was something I was trying to find somebody else. I knew it was going to happen, and I talked to a couple of other people, and I said, this is about to happen. Will you stay in the room, and will you stop it when it happens? Nobody wanted to deal with it. So they didn't really understand what I was saying. So I stayed, and I waited, and it happened.
All right, so we're 1 hour and 30 minutes.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
And why don't we wrap it up with... Some podcasting flesh.
What's that?
Let's talk about podcasting.
I thought we were going to sing about sing This Land Is Your Land.
Oh, God, you already dragged us all into doing that.
Harvard, I heard from Professor Lessing.
What?
Harvard has a license for people singing at... So Stanford has a license for people singing at school. I don't have that license.
Oh, excuse me.
So you can't sing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, there must be something I can sing. All right. Anyway, podcast. What should we talk
about? Well, I can't wait to hear the... I don't know, so, you know, it may not have been addressed, but there were a number of issues that came up about, you know, how we deal with this intersection with the RIAA that's coming. I mean, the...
What did Ron Blum say?
What he said.
About the intersections coming up with the RIA. He had a very succinct...
He said,
I wish you were here, because it was very... You know who Ron Blum is?
Yeah, I met him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we should tell the...
He's my former partner. Right. I think New Ideas Company, we took public. And I met him early on in the company, you know, and he really did the whole taking us public, and I kind of held on to his coattails.
Yeah, I heard... Maybe you listened to the show.
You've heard on to other people here, Steve. We're not the only
one. I'm looking at you when I'm telling you this.
Okay, I'll shut up.
Because I'm polite.
Okay.
He needs some foil. He needs a crutch. He's so used to doing these things. Why do you need to look at him when you're talking to him?
Because it comes across in the show.
It works.
It does. But you see, we do all these things without... I mean,
Have you ever smiled at anybody when you're talking on the phone with them? All the time.
You're probably right about that, yeah.
Okay. So
I'm getting tired. I'll shut up now.
He's a musician, really.
He wrote some hit song.
Yeah, but he was like... And he'll admit to this. And he never really... He made money, and he had a studio, and had lots of... did lots of session work, of course, lots of stay alive. What he didn't mention is that he lived with Princess Stephanie of Monaco for a while.
Wow.
Yeah, that's...
Was she a hottie?
Fucking A.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. In between bodyguards.
No, way before that. Oh, she was he produced her record, which is how it always happens, isn't it?
Wow.
Hey, baby. I'm over here.
I got you, baby.
Oh, don't get me in jail.
Uh-oh. I heard a song come out there.
So he did, but what he knows from an artist standpoint a lot about getting paid or not getting paid. Just as an example, he's done a lot of soundtracks, probably for that movie we saw last night with Don and Drew. And if it's played in an American theater, he gets nothing. He doesn't get paid for that, zero. If it's played in a German theater, he gets paid. So, you know, this is weird. And he said everything should be labeled fair use. The idea was, look at ringtones. Billions of dollars being made on ringtones. It's all back catalog stuff. And, you know, it's all real simple. The DRM works, and people are making tons of money on it. And he says, why don't we have three levels? You know, it's real simple. There's fair use, which is just I'm using it for myself. There's sharing it with my friends, which would be $20. And there's professional
use, maybe podcast, maybe 5,000, whatever. Make it simple. Boom, boom, boom. And everyone wants to pay. Everyone wants to participate. And his approach was, don't try to go to the lawyers to get this done. Go to the CEOs of the music business and show them the money. I think it's possible to implement.
Well, I sort of agree with that, but
I wish he were here to explain.
Yeah, you have to listen to that. This is the guy who could go to the CEO.
Yeah, right.
He speaks the language.
I hear that, and I think that is the right approach, is to go and talk to them. The thing, though, is I think that there's an opportunity to create enough content to be able to go to them and say, okay, you want some of this?
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah,
you make a deal.
He's saying, except without being confrontational about it, being salesy about it, saying this is, you know, here's a distribution system, we want to plug you into it.
And right, but we need to create an archive, a backlog, a catalog of this, so that we can then have something.
You can't stop that catalog from being created now.
Well, the catalog, catalog is already there. It's just we don't know how to.
Hey, how about I have another idea for a format, okay? Another format for a conference, all right? What you do is you rent a hotel like this, okay? Maybe not here. This is pretty close, actually, to what I would like, except it's not like near a beach or something, a place where you can go for hikes or whatever. And you rent out enough rooms in it so that you could have, like, 25 different people who do podcasts in the hotel at the same time for a week. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And you cross-pollinate. You sit down. You do exactly what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
You do the. You find out what the combinations do. You do the combinatorics.
And you also
maybe even do a round robin. Maybe even play some games too.
And you also have that big room sometimes.
Whenever you want it, actually.
The recording studio. Yeah.
Right. Whenever you want.
Yeah. That's what that was.
And it's a 24x7 thing. It's going on all day, all night. Yeah. You know, whatever. You know, and it's
That would, a house band.
Yeah. You need the whole nine yards. We've been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah, the Mo Jones, Jones will be here. They will be here. They will fucking be here.
And you have to do a live recording with them before you leave town. Not this town. But.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. I will. They're going to come to the castle. I'll have them do a little mini concert.
Curry Castle.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Everybody was very happy when you played The Power of Pure Intellect at the beginning of your session.
It was like a wave.
It was nice.
Oh, yeah. It was the show is starting.
Exactly.
No, it was that. Oh, this is a show.
Yeah. It was.
Notice I didn't mention Daily Source Code.
No, you didn't have to. We all got in that mode right there.
It was cool. Yeah.
It's like Pavlov's dogs, for crying out loud. I mean, we started boing. Say that again.
Boing.
In 50 years, you're going to be, okay, let's have another hand for him. Come on, give us another boing.
I'm already doing that with it. What are you talking about?
That's when I die. There's no song. It's just boing.
I was just giving you another 50.
No, I took
50
it.
50 is good. That would be 90. Yeah, you could do it. You could do it. You could do it. Yeah, you'll have great-great-great-grandchildren by then.
Okay.
You're not Jewish, you don't have to say that. So,
what do you mean I'm not allowed to say
that? You guys want to go to dinner?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I had thought maybe we'd go for Fuki Sushi. You like that? Or?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to do that.
It's right down the street. It's a really good sushi place. Yeah, that used to be. I don't know if it is anymore. It used to be Steve Jobs' favorite sushi place. Yeah, you could go in there. You'd see him there, yeah. Yeah.
Let's go and see if he's there.
Yeah, maybe he's there. Whoa. Can we ask for an autograph? Maybe
an autograph.
Maybe so I'm podcasting. How are you doing, podcasting?
Yeah. Ooh. Hey, I think you guys have reinvented.
So, how is the weather, podcasting?
Yes, podcasting.
All right. So,
well, hold on.
We have to say everybody.
Everybody. No, we have to say something else. Hold on. I know my mouse is. You have to say, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, let's get the fuck out of here.
Steve?
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Right on, everybody. It's Trade Secrets. See you around on the next Trade Secrets. The
dubious crew's got beats for you.
Trade Secrets. These heads will finally peep this. Trade Secrets.